This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Your official home to talk New York sports is WFAN. Call us anytime at 888-808-1019. The Fan, 1019 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy, it's 3:05. You know what that means. All right, here we go for Wednesday morning on this February 26th. Every day until the Jets get a new quarterback, that might be in free agency, that might be in the draft, who knows? But we're going to go through every option that the New York Jets have at the quarterback position. As you just heard Marco talk about, Aaron Glenn has a decisive opinion on what kind of player he wants. We'll go back after we spin the wheel and listen to that cut again, just to give you a little bit of time to separate from when you last heard it. And we can talk about the elements that they're looking for, and it sounds a lot like someone that I know. We'll see if it sounds like this next quarterback, but every day at 3 o'clock, we spin the random wheel of culture quarterbacks, the quarterbacks that are far better options in the minds of the Jets operation, to come in and be quarterback for the New York Jets, right? It's better. You can't have Aaron Rodgers. That would be silly. So let's go through all the options. We've gone through many good ones. Yesterday, we went through Matthew Stafford, who might be the best option on the board. Justin Fields, not better. Kirk Cousins, don't make me laugh. Tyrod Taylor, even the coach told you today, I don't know if Tyrod Taylor is the guy. So we've been through a bunch of different options. Now it's time to find out who's today's candidate, if he's better than Aaron Rodgers. Let's go. It is time to spin the wheel.
Jones is going to run it on a fake handoff.
Oh,
he's
no.
to the five. He's in. Touchdown, Giants. Daniel Jones.
No.
Faked the handoff and then ran it in from 7 yards out. And in his first start, Daniel Jones with a rushing touchdown. Third and one. Jones over center. Strong formation to the right. Play action pass. Jones back. Going to get sacked. And the ball stolen by Adams. Takes it out of his hands. And he's in for the touchdown. Handoff. Nope. Jones is going to keep it. Jones is going to run it. Jones across midfield. It's a foot race. Can he go all the way? Daniel Jones to the 20. And he stumbles and he falls down at the 10.
What's so funny?
The turf monster got him.
Jones takes the snap. Fires it deep into the end zone. Touchdown, Giants. Isaiah Hodgins. He just ran the post. Jones to Hodgins, a winning combination, and the Giants take the lead with 1:03 to go in the first. Jones fires it right, and it's intercepted by the Eagles at midfield. Oh, they just baited him, and James Bradbury gets the pick and touchdown at the Giant 49. Jones sits over center, hands it off for Singletary, back for Jones.
I feel like you're playing more highlights than any other quarterback.
Jones in the shotgun.
Oh, you definitely are.
Jones back, fires one to the left, and the pass is deflected. And is it intercepted by Josie Jewell on the left sideline? I think it is.
Talked with Mr. Mara. Again, they had their discussion. We talked. Thought it was best for him to be able to do that. You know, he put a lot into it. He's a great young man. It's never easy.
I don't even think I have to talk about this one. Daniel Jones as option for the New York Jets. Yeah, let's bring him back to New York. My goodness. Daniel Jones, like Aaron Rodgers loses too much. Aaron Rodgers is injured too much. My goodness. Not only, I mean, listen, the guy can't stay healthy. Listen, I don't want to bash Daniel Jones because I do it a lot. I don't want to bash Daniel Jones, but, I mean, you're going to talk about Aaron Rodgers. When's the last time Daniel Jones played a full season? I mean, I guess he could have this year. They cut him. But, I mean, this guy can't stay healthy. He's got a neck issue that they thought might end his career. Thankfully, it didn't for him and I guess for us. He blew out his knee. They paid him $40 million a year. And for that $40 million a year for 2 years, he won three games, started 16, and threw 10 touchdown passes. 16 games, three wins, 10 touchdown passes. He was the most turned over quarterback in the league to start his career. He is a quarterback best known for his legs. There is nothing that you could tell me Aaron Rodgers does better than him. Or excuse me, that Daniel Jones does better than Aaron Rodgers. There's nothing. He's not healthier. He's not more productive. He doesn't win more. Like even the Aaron Rodgers Jets edition is far superior to anything Daniel Jones has done. 28-11. The most touchdowns he's ever thrown was his rookie season of 24. 24, 11, 10, 15, 2, 8. Aaron Rodgers last year, as bad as he was and as much as the Jets lost, had a better season than Daniel Jones has ever had in his career. He threw for more yards than Daniel Jones has ever thrown for. He's thrown more touchdowns than Daniel Jones ever threw. And the differential between touchdown and interception was bigger than any year of Daniel Jones' career. Even the year he limited the turnovers to only five interceptions, he only threw 15 touchdown passes. Now, if you're going to tell me, oh, but Daniel Jones had a terrible team, well, what exactly? I know he had Devontae Adams at the end and Garrett Wilson, and sure, that's much better than any wide receiver Daniel Jones had, but like the Jets were this great shakes. Daniel Jones is an option. Daniel Jones is one of those quarterbacks that would fit the New York Giants if he had played for another team, where you bring him in, he's young enough, he's had enough experience in the NFL, he has won a road playoff game in the NFL. You bring him in, you draft the young quarterback, and you see if he wins the job or the young quarterback wins the job. Now, in New York specifically, could he give a mentorship to a young, if you draft a quarterback with the seventh overall pick, bringing in Daniel Jones for your bridge quarterback could probably do worse than that. He's someone who's played in the city, knows the pitfalls of it, knows how to deal with the media, has had enough. I mean, he hasn't had any real success in his career to speak of, but he's played in the city. He started, you know, a good amount of games in the NFL. He's been around the league. You could do worse, I suppose. But it is far worse than Aaron Rodgers. So I leave this up to Fliegelman every day. What is our decision on this edition of Spin the Wheel of Culture Quarterbacks? Is Daniel Jones a better option than Aaron Rodgers?
This guy sucks.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
I know you're shocked that was the verdict, right?
We didn't discuss it, so you could have went anywhere.
You're not thinking about the culture.
I know.
He's such a great culture.
He does
hit all the intangibles.
Yes.
I don't want to. Like, well, that's not sarcasm.
You know what? No, but no, that's not true. He probably is a good culture guy. The team loves
him. Right, he is. He absolutely is.
But this is a new cut. I want to keep this cut. We're going to make this a cut that goes along with Spin the Wheel every single day. Because this is the definition of what the Jets are looking for in their quarterback, in their players. So we're going to ask this. We're going to listen to the head coach of the New York Jets, Aaron Glenn, about what a New York Jet football player and specifically a quarterback is. And we're going to measure that up against the guy we spin the wheel and find out who it is and against Aaron Rodgers. So let's see if these qualities are more in the camp of Daniel Jones or more in the camp of Aaron Rodgers. Let's hear.
Maybe it is what it is. So that's it. And the thing is, I don't want to disrespect any other players we have on our team. And it kind of pisses me off and some of the other players that that's what we all talk about. You have Quentin Williams. You have Quincy Williams. You have AVT. Now you have Joe Tippmann. All those guys need to be respected as far as winning games also.
All right, we're going to try that one more time. That's not the cut. That's okay. It happens. All right, here we go. This is the cut.
Listen, I look for guys that love football. I look for guys that are highly competitive. And I look for guys that endear themselves to their teammates. And those are some of the things that you just don't be able to scout. But you really have to dig in and find out who the player is. And when you have those qualities, man, it overcomes a lot of things. We're looking for smart, tough, aggressive, and resilient players. All right, we're going to do everything we can to find those guys. And listen, you can find them in all different spots. Small schools, big-time schools, trades. You know, wherever we can find them, we're going to try to bring them on this team.
Smart, tough, resilient, loves football, endears himself to his teammates. So let's measure that up against Daniel Jones and Aaron Rodgers. Smart, as I'm not saying Daniel Jones is stupid. He went to Duke. But as far as football terms go, I think you could argue Aaron Rodgers is one of the smartest quarterbacks to ever play. Tough? Well, I think they're both tough. Daniel Jones, I got to give it to him, is tough as hell. But he gets injured. I think Aaron Rodgers is pretty damn tough, too. So let's even if we give that to Daniel Jones. Resilient? Loves football? Endears himself to his teammates? And I think we missed winner. Yeah, Aaron Rodgers fits those qualities a hell of a lot more than Daniel Jones. Even the endears his teammates do. Listen, a lot of his teammates loved him. Vanilla Vic, Barkley, he was in the box with him. Listen to the Jets talk about it. Listen to the Jets talk about Aaron Rodgers. Like everything you just heard, and this is not to necessarily compare him to, this is more making the point of everything he just said was about it. You could directly link to what Aaron Rodgers is. And yet they don't want him. They'd rather have the likes of Daniel Jones. Or we'll see. Doesn't make any sense to me. I'm hung up on it. And we're going to spin the wheel every day just to prove it. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. Let's get back to the calls. Let's go to Mark in Jackson Heights. What's up, Mark?
Hey, C-Mac. How are you?
Hey, Mark. Coming in hot. What's going on, buddy? How are you?
Well, you know, yesterday I told you a story about George Steinbrenner living at the Regency.
Oh, yes.
So I have another good one for you.
Another good George Steinbrenner story or just another story
in
general?
Yes. Okay. Were you aware, C-Mac, because I know you're a great musician and vocalist, were you aware that George Steinbrenner was a drummer?
I did not know that George Steinbrenner was a drummer, no. And I feel like I feel like with all the reference to Paul O'Neill being a drummer, someone would have made that connection. I've never heard that, though. No.
Okay, so here goes. I'm playing again at the Regency with Rosemary Clooney.
Mm-hmm.
And the word comes down from the boss. They said, look it. If the Yankees win the World Series, George wants you cats to play for him. So we're in the club. We're watching a game on the TV, you know, on a break.
Mm-hmm.
They gave the ball to Clemens to pitch.
Okay.
So the Yankees win the World Series. They cleared out the club, within an hour.
Yeah.
Here comes Chris Chambliss, Reggie Jackson, Roger Clemens sucking on a lollipop, and George Steinbrenner.
Okay.
the only four guys, and they came into the club, and they set up chairs right in front of us, and they sat and listened to us play. I was flabbergasted. I thought, don't they have someplace important to go, like an interview with Wolf Blitzer or something? Ew. But they sat in the club, and we were playing like Dixieland songs, you know.
You should have played Yankee Doodle Dandy.
So we take a break, and Mr. Steinbrenner comes up.
Yeah.
And he says, he starts talking to our drummer, Joe Cacuzzo, and they're all talking about drumming. And George Steinbrenner studied out of a book written by George Stone. George Stone wrote a lot of books on snare drum technique and all kinds of stuff.
Right, anyway, Matt, we're getting in the weeds, Mark. Come on, let's go.
Okay, so anyway, a lot of my friends said, did you talk to George, Mr. Steinbrenner, about the Yankees? I'm like, absolutely not. That's why he liked us. Because we didn't talk about the Yankees. We talked about music or other things.
That's a pretty good story that he came and played drums. Well, I don't know if anyone's ever played drums in a turtleneck before. I mean, I'm sure somewhere down the line, but that is a unique look, playing drums in a turtleneck. But, And that must have been 99. That's the only game that Clemens was on the mound for a series winner. So 1999, Roger Clemens comes in, sucking on a lollipop that Kurt Radomski got him. And then George Steinbrenner comes up and talks about his George Stone book of drumming. Amazing. Jesse in Queens, what's up, Jesse? Jesse, you there? Jesse. All right, that's it. You give me no choice. You're gone. Stuart in Brooklyn, what's up, Stu?
Good morning, C-Mac. I didn't know George played the drums.
I didn't know George played the drums either.
Oh, God.
I thought the story was going to go that George actually played the drums, but all I got was the book, the drumming book he read.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, George was a talented guy, and he appeared on SNL, and he was on, and they had that guy imitate him on Seinfeld.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know how that means he's talented. It means Larry David's talented, but yes.
Well, Larry David's talented beyond talent.
Yes.
But, you know, let's get back to the Jets. The Jets would be, Woody Johnson has no clue about football. None. He's got to do one thing. He's got to stand back and let the people he hires to do their jobs. Aaron Rodgers, for one more year, whether he's the Jets, the quarterback or not, will be better than Daniel Jones or any of the other names that you've mentioned this week.
Yeah.
Why? He wins. If you give him a good team around him, they could possibly get 8, 9, 10 wins. And the thing is, go ahead.
No, I think that he gives them the best chance to do that. Other than, I'll admit, depending on what you'd have to trade for him, Matthew Stafford would be right there. Other than Matthew Stafford, who is going to cost you money and it's going to cost you the cap hit of $36 million for Aaron Rodgers and draft picks, he can win you as many games, if not more, than Aaron Rodgers. Other than that, not a better option.
Nobody. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Woody Johnson just seems to be, he wants to always be involved. Why can't he just stand back and let the people he hires do their job? Or is that impossible?
Yeah, I mean, he's found it difficult. It's hard to know exactly what level he's done that. Obviously, of recent years, since he's come back from England and the team has floundered a bit, he's gotten involved, right? There's no doubt. We've all read the story. We've all read the Athletic report. He's been heavily involved. And I do believe he thinks that he is the reason for the talented roster. I think he believes he put together this team, and that's why the coach had to go, because he put together an unbelievable team that lots of people were telling him that it's as good a roster in the NFL. And for it to fall apart and play the way it played, the coach had to go because it's a bad reflection on Woody Johnson, who put together that great team. So I think that's a major problem. That's why I want to win. That's why I want to end this playoff drought, because I need Woody to have enough confidence in whoever's running it to leave him alone. I need the stories to go away. I need the Jets to get the benefit of the doubt. I need the Jets to actually have people want to come here. Things need to change. We're going to try Jesse in Queens one more time. Jesse.
Hey, Chris. What's up, man?
How's what's up, buddy? Good. How are you?
Good, good, good. On the Knicks, I mean, I just think, some teams like Boston, they didn't win until Udoka left and Mazzulla came. Some there's other examples in the NBA of teams getting to a certain point with a coach, and then to get to the end game, you just need a new voice, you need a new whatever. And I think it might be the time, because they just seem not be able to be competitive against these top teams that they're going to face as they get further in the playoffs. So, and he has a reputation to be a defensive coach. And their defense is in tatters. So, I mean, it's just not, I think right now, it's not, they're not, listening to him. His influence is not really carrying a weight. So it might be time for a new voice. What do you think?
I think that's probably too far right now. I'm obviously not even considering it until the end of the season. He gets the year, that's for sure. I mean, I'm not even saying that's what you were suggesting. I'm just saying, let's just be clear. He gets the year. I don't think the team is very good defensively. I don't know. I am disappointed in some of the adjustments against the Boston Celtics in particular, because every game looks so eerily similar. It's the same issues that are hurting them over and over again, and they haven't tried a different strategy. And that's what's frustrating. But right now, if you look at it, Karl Anthony Towns is just not a good defender. Jalen Brunson is just not a good defender. And I don't know if it's not listening to the coach, because Bridges has been this way since he stepped onto the Garden floor and in a Knicks uniform. He's not been the same defender he was in Brooklyn and Phoenix. He just hasn't been. So, I don't know if I could put that at the coach, because I don't think they have good defensive players. It's the same thing I say about Aaron Boone. Everyone's, oh, the defense is sloppy. They didn't have good defensive players. Gleyber Torres is terrible at second base. What would you like him to do about it? Mikal Bridges isn't fighting through screens. I'm sure he's telling him to fight through screens a little bit, or at least, be more aggressive with it. He's not doing it. And he's incapable of it at the moment. OG Anunoby, arguably their best perimeter defender, one of the best in the league, at least that's what we were told when they traded for him last year, and that's what we saw glimpses of last year, has been a step slow for 2 months and has been injured for the last month. So, and Mitchell Robinson, who, this is a little bit of a talking point we haven't gotten into, but the coach called Mitchell Robinson the starting center. He said, we've been without our starting center all year, which indicates the idea that Mitch Robinson, when back, is going to be the five, Cat's going to be the four, and Josh Hart's going to go to the bench. Now, I don't know if that's going to come to fruition right away, but he called him the starting center. That will help the team defensively, I would think, as much as Josh Hart, plays with an abandon, and we know what he is on the offensive side of the floor and even on the board. I don't know if I'd call him overall a great defensive player. He's one of the Knicks' better ones, but I don't know if I'd call him a great defensive player. And obviously, Mitchell Robinson is a far superior rim protector than Karl Anthony Towns, and someone should have helped the defense a little bit. But, I don't think they're very good defensively. So I don't think they have a team that plays to his strength as far as defensive prowess. But I will say that last year's team, although better defensively in many ways, also played with a fierceness that I don't sense from this team. Now, I've been telling you that these games are important. I've been telling you it's hard to consider them a contender when they're losing these games in the fashion they're losing them to Cleveland and Boston and Oklahoma City, and they're 0-7 against those three teams, and it's hard to take them overly seriously. They have a lot of time to figure things out. They are getting Mitchell Robinson back, and they're going to have time to adjust and make a game plan adjustment. And maybe, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, maybe, how about this? Maybe the coach knows that they're going to play this team in the playoffs and doesn't want to switch up his defensive strategy. He's saving it for when they need it most in the second round of the playoffs. I just came up with that. Probably not true. But hey, I'd like to dream. I was watching the Greg Maddux. I was watching the documentary on Greg Maddux on the MLB Network. And his catcher was telling a great story about facing Jeff Bagwell. And they went into this. This was a great story. And there was also a scene where he was watching an at-bat against Barry Bonds on a tablet, and Barry Bonds was watching the same at-bat on a tablet, and they were doing like these separate interviews and going through the at-bat. It was awesome. I could watch that all day. Like watching them each watch the at-bat and break down that pitch and this pitch, and he's like, now I'm thinking he's gonna throw me another breaking ball, whatever it was. Like, it was just to hear them think through the at-bat, one of the great tacticians in the history of the sport of Greg Maddux, and one of the great hitters of all time in Barry Bonds, you know, steroids aside or whatever, there was nobody better. Like, to hear them break down an at-bat against each other was one of the more awesome segments I've ever seen in a baseball documentary. It was really awesome. But the Atlanta Brave catcher tells a story about how in the middle of the year against the game against the Astros and Jeff Bagwell, going into the game, he was like, don't call anything inside on Bagwell. The approach is away against Bagwell. And then in the game, it's like the sixth inning. The Braves are up a couple of runs or something. And Greg Maddux calls a changeup inside. And the catcher was like, I thought the game plan was away. So he calls a fastball away, and Maddux shakes his head and gives him the changeup inside thing again, because Maddux used to call his own pitches sometimes. So Maddux calls for a changeup inside, and Bagwell hits it 500 feet to left field. And as they're walking off the field at the end of the inning, the catcher says to him, I thought you said stay away from him. Why are you calling a changeup there? And Greg Maddux said, well, they're a pretty good team. We're a pretty good team. We're probably going to see each other in the playoffs. And in the playoffs, he's going to be looking for that pitch, thinking, I'll throw it again. And then in the playoffs, he stayed away, and instead of throwing that changeup, he threw a slider away, whatever, and struck him out. Like, that is ultimate gamesmanship. Giving up a home run intentionally in the regular season to set up an at-bat that might not even happen in the postseason. So maybe that's what Tibbs is doing. Hey, you know what? Let's get blown out and not change up our defensive strategy and let them think we're incapable. And then when we get to the, you know, it's like, it's Rocky II. He's going to change it up and not fight southpaw and fight right-handed the entire time to protect his eye. And then at the last minute, he's going to switch back to lefty. Or they're just not anywhere near as good as the Boston Celtics and they're doomed. But I don't know if Tibbs isn't reaching them, but I have to admit, I haven't seen a single, like, good offensive look off a timeout, and a single is probably a bit of a stretch. I don't feel like there's enough good looks out of timeouts. I think they're terrible off the side out of bounds play. I think they haven't shown effort this year. I think he's played, you know, the minute police have a legitimate point. You know, I don't know if they should have, you know, torches and pitchforks, but they do have a legitimate point. And, you know, he shouldn't have, you know, a guy with a banged up knee in Carl Anthony Towns, who's going to be questionable for the game tonight, you know, playing with 3 minutes left in a blowout. Like, sometimes he just does stuff that doesn't make any sense. But, and that's been the moniker of him, right? Like, he's that coach who can get you to a certain point, and then you need a different coach to get over the hump. Now, if Cleveland loses this year, you're going to hear Kenny Atkinson noise about that. Like, he's a good coach to build him up, but can he get you over the hump? Do you need a Tyronn Lue to come in and be the head coach to take you to the championship? But I don't know if I'm ready to. He's been so good, I don't know if I could say I'd fire him. Like, I really don't know. That you'd have to really, at the end of the season, talk to Jalen Brunson, talk to Carl Anthony Towns, talk to Josh Hart, and see what their feeling on the matter is. But, I mean, he's changed this franchise in so many ways that it's hard for me to just give up on him.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House of the Home Theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Your official home to talk New York sports is WFAN. Call us anytime at 888-808-1019. The Fan, 1019 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
So I got really good news yesterday. I talked about it with Fleegs, and I talked about it with Gio, I think, a little bit. So I don't know if Gio brought it up in the morning show. Eddie just reminded me, because everything's celestial. We go with Eddie's opinion on it. But I am flabbergasted at this meteor that has been hurling towards Earth for God knows how long and was projected to come close enough to Earth to possibly hit it in the year 2032. And over the past week, it's a week, right? This thing is literally years away. God knows what speed it's traveling, how far away it is, the different views they have of it, all this stuff. In like a week, it went from like a 1.9% chance of hitting the Earth to a 2.3% chance of hitting the Earth to a 3% chance of hitting an Earth. Like, it got all the way down to like one out of 32 chance to impact the Earth and kill millions of people. Now, it wouldn't be a Earth ender, but it could be a city ender is what they called it. They say it's the size of the Eiffel Tower. And it's big enough to destroy cities and would kill millions of people. Now, we'd have long enough of an idea of when it was going to hit, if we determined it was going to hit. And we'd be able to maybe move people from wherever it was going to hit and evacuate. But still, millions of people, cities ruined. 1.7... 2.4, 3%. And now, yesterday, we got the news that it's 0.28%. That now it's like a one in, you know, 100,000 chance of hitting the earth. And that's great news, and I'm happy, right? I'm a little disappointed that we can't follow this anymore. I wanted it to obviously not hit the earth, but, like, you know, wouldn't mind a talking point for another year or two. But how did this all happen in a week? That's what I want to know. How did this dramatically change? Where it was every day was going up. My brother-in-law was texting me updates every single day about the odds of it hitting and impacting the earth. Well, it's going up. It's going up every day. What are they looking at that it's changing? And like, you do the math. The earth spins at this rate. The thing is coming at this angle and this rate. Like, how could it change so much in a week? I need Neil Tyson deGrasse on. I do. I need Fleegs. I don't ask you for much. I don't know if we've ever put a guest on this damn show. But we got to get an astronomer.
I have booked, Neil deGrasse Tyson. I have booked him before. I got him on the morning show with Jerry and Sal.
Did you get him on the morning? Yeah. I want someone to talk about, not even just what the impact would mean or how, you know, other than how the hell did we go through a week and change the odds so dramatically? And now we're confident it's not going to hit. How could you be confident? Like, how could you read the news that it's not going to hit the earth, or that it's got a, now it's only a 0.28%, which is the normal number that has come across our desk, you know, six or seven times in the last decade. Like, every once in a while it pops up. Yeah, it's going to come by. It's got like a point something percent chance, but, you know, nothing to worry about. 3% is different. You know, 3% is you're in a room with 33 people and one of you is going down. I don't feel comfortable being in that room. You get into a room with 100 people and they say, you know, one of you is going to lose your leg. I feel better about those odds. But, like, one out of 33 is scary as hell. How did it change that much? And now, how could I be confident that tomorrow we're not going to hear it's up to 10%? Like, it's dramatically changed day to day. That scares me. Like, I feel there is zero confidence. Zero confidence that I can trust that now there's only a 0.28%. How can you trust it? It was just 1.7, 2.8, 3.1. Like, it just happened over the course of 2 weeks. Now today I should be like, oof. Thank God it's only 0.28. Nope. Not me. Not going to pull the wool over my eyes. They probably realize that that number is too scary for the American people, and now they're lying to us. That's what happened. That's what happened. No doubt. If you want to distract me, have the Yankees sign a DH. Get another bat in here, and I'll forget all about it. But until then, I am not trusting the idea that this, that we are safe. Not trusting it. It is too up and down. I need someone to explain to me how 2 days ago we thought it was at 3%, and now today we're confident it's at 0.28. Someone's got to explain that to me. What changed in the sky in a day? Like, what happened?
It's like a crazy fluctuating weather forecast with much higher stakes.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, at least, but the weather, like, changes. Like, this thing's hundreds of miles away. Like, what happened? Like, you know, did God blow on it? Like, what happened? Like, what changed the trajectory?
And that's what happened to Scott Norwood's kick, too.
Right, exactly right. Exactly right. Like, I find it hard to believe that it changed that dramatically. From, like, it literally went up like a point and a half percent and then dropped down to 0.28. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. I'm having a hard time coming.
You think God blew the ball out of Aaron Judge's glove?
Oh, that's a low blow, man. It's a low blow, Jerry. That is a low blow. It's possible, though. It is possible. I wish you guys were in more World Series games so I can knock you.
God blew Cespedes over game one of the 2015 World Series.
It's, yeah. Can't think of, you know, much else.
Kept Piazza's ball out or kept Piazza's ball in.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah, there are very easy ways to take those shots at the Mets in World Series games.
Yeah, that is a good one. Blew Piazza's ball back in, because if you watch that, I am convinced. If you watch the replay of the final out of the 2000 World Series, Rivera is convinced Piazza got it. If you watch, and I've watched Mo, his entire career, I've probably come close to watching every single pitch Mariano Rivera ever threw in his career. And I know his mannerisms. When Piazza hits that ball, his right arm straightens out. He stands up straight and he gives you the teeth clenched face and turns around to watch it. He thought he got it. There's no doubt he thought he got it. But thankfully he didn't. And let's be honest, it wouldn't have mattered. You'd have lost the next day. That lousy 2000 team that won, 86 games, 85 games, that completely stumbled down the stretch, still took care of you. Luis Sojo, baby. All right, now I'm just being silly. But the Judge ball was a low blow, man. There was no need for that. 888-808-1019. The other thing I'm seeing from as we've been talking about the reaction at the combine from the Jets head coach and the GM, and of course from the Giants GM Joe Shane. Another thing that I'm seeing a lot of different comments on is the tush push, and a lot of NFL people want to get rid of the tush push. I have mixed opinions on this. Here's my opinion on it. One, I don't think it should be banned. I don't think it should be banned. I don't see any reason why that play should be banned. But it's something they've mastered. They're better at it than everybody. It is not a guarantee. It's not like it doesn't matter who does it, it's successful. They've become extremely good at it. Nobody else can do it. I know there's some talk about the injury issue. Have I missed something? Has anyone been significantly injured on this tush push? As far as I know, no one has. So I don't think it should be. But what I do disagree with the people who agree with that part of it, like the people who think it shouldn't be changed, they give you for some sort of like holier than thou type of thing about like, For the betterment of the game, or you can't just change a play because it's successful. That's the reason why you're doing it. Like every rule that's ever been changed every rule that's ever been instituted to make a change like this is because a play has become either too successful, or because a play creates injuries, or because like the idea that this is above the onside kick being eliminated, or this is above a field goal extra point being moved back, or this is above anything else. Like if they believe it's for the benefit of the game, like the shift rule in Major League Baseball, if they believe the product on the field, the NFL game that they are selling as a product, and that is a business, if they believe it is detrimental to the product of the game, they are well within their bounds to cancel and it would be the first rule ever, though. And the one thing that does make me want it is it would be the first rule ever to go against offense. Like, when is the last time the NFL has instituted a rule that hasn't helped the offense? Like, every rule. Since I've been watching the NFL, every rule has made it easier to score points. Every rule has made it easier for the offense. Every rule has made it more difficult for the defense. Like, every rule. So the one appealing aspect about it is this would be the first rule ever to impact defense in a positive way. But I still don't think they should, but I don't think it's beyond a question mark. I don't think it's beyond anything that should be discussed. Like, I don't think it should be, but I think it's worth the discussion. And I don't think it's a non-starter that it's only because it's a successful play. They moved back the extra point became a 99% play, so they changed it. Like, if it gets to a point where every team in the NFL is guaranteed to get 2 yards on a play and they feel like that's not in the best interest of the game, they'll change it. And they have absolutely every right to. I don't like the idea of, oh, you know, you can't do it because of any... Like, I don't want to do it because right now, I don't think it's anything other than the Eagles have come up with a really good play. I'll be honest with you. If every team in football is now is first and 9 instead of first and 10... because this is a guaranteed successful way to get 2 yards, and it's become that way throughout the NFL, then maybe I would be. Right now, it's just that it feels a little bit more like you're punishing the Eagles as opposed to protecting the product. But the minute the NFL feels like the product is better without this play, or there is some sort of significant injury that comes with it, then I think it's well within their means to ban it. But right now, there other teams have tried it. Other teams do it. Other teams have had some success with it. But no other team has been as successful as Philadelphia with it. And Raheem Morris in Atlanta is complaining about it. I just saw Buffalo complaining about it. The head coach in Buffalo, McDermott. Right now, I don't want to punish one team who's really good at something. Like, I think that's unfair. Even if it's the Eagles, even if I hate them. But I do think if it's for the betterment of the game, it's well within their rights. Just like the shift or anything else. Any other rule change to eliminate anything is about safety or the betterment of the play on the field. But right now, if every team does it, that's fine. Like, that's why I hated the Ohtani rule. Like, the Ohtani rule is about one player. Like, that's why I hated it. Now, oh, we're going to allow DHs, pitchers to be the DH as well, and so they could stay in the game even after they're done pitching. They did it for one player. That's why I hated that rule. If this becomes a thing where pitchers are hitting, then fine, because we don't want to lose the best hitters in the game, that's fine. I really won't mind it if every team has pitchers that hit or it becomes much more prevalent. They did it so one guy could do it. And I don't want to add rules to benefit one player, and I don't want to take away rules that only impact one team. But if it becomes a play that is a guaranteed yard and a half for every team in the NFL, and they feel like that eliminates some sort of... I'd be surprised if the NFL cares, because it means more first downs and more offenses. So, I mean, it means more points, more touchdowns, more first downs. Like, I'd be shocked if the NFL bans it, other than injuries. But if for whatever reason they deem it too successful a play for everyone, then it's fine. But right now it feels like it would be punishing the Eagles because they're good at something.
Your official home to talk New York sports is WFAN. Call us anytime at 888-808-1019. The Fan, 1019 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 357. Nick Monagle here with you on The Fan. All right, Marco's in here for a second. I wanted to ask you two things as a fellow Yankee fan.
All right, then.
The two obvious things that we've been talking about, the not real baseball stuff. Because I think we all we have mixed feelings. I don't know about me and you, but as Yankee fans, some of us, mixed feelings on the beard policy. But even the Frank Sinatra stuff, I don't think there's anyone who's like against changing the song if you're leaving the game after a loss. Like, I don't think anyone's like truly against it. But I never viewed the song as like the winning song. I viewed it as you go to Yankee Stadium, you watch a game. As you leave, they play Frank Sinatra, win or loss. Like, it never bothered me. It's never something that jumped out at me. I have to admit, having said that, I don't like watching teams celebrate on the field. So, like, watching the Dodgers win the World Series
while
Sinatra's playing, issue for me. My one example that I had personally was leaving the 2015 wild card game and watching Astros celebrate, and there was like 8 guys dressed up in full Astro uniform waving me goodbye as Frank Sinatra played. So just to eliminate those instances, it's worth it to me overall. I'm not complaining. But I never left this. Like, they lose 3-2. They lose 3-2 to the Orioles in June.
I don't leave going, how the hell are you playing Frank?
I don't know if I screamed that much, but I didn't like it. But I feel like, and maybe I'm crazy, but when I was younger, I feel like they played the Liza Minnelli version when they lost and played the Frank version when they won.
I read an article that they didn't specifically say they did it like that.
Yeah, but they did, though.
Okay, maybe they did.
No, but it felt like that. Every time they lost, it was Liza.
Okay.
And when they won, it was Frank.
Yeah. Maybe.
I was good with that.
They're saying that they mixed both, and it would, it typically would be Liza after losses, but it wasn't like they did it where this is the win, this is the loss. They intermingled them, including a duet with Tony Bennett. There was three versions in the early 90s that were circulating. It was Liza Minnelli's version, it was the regular Frank version, and then Frank and Tony Bennett duet. And they would interchange the three of them.
See, I don't remember that. But yeah.
That's the article I read. I don't remember anything.
In my mind, I equated loss with Liza.
Okay.
Win with Frank.
Okay, so you have that.
So when they stopped doing that and they played Frank for both, I was kind of like, this is stupid. Like, you lose, you shouldn't be playing, you know, A number one. It just doesn't make sense.
No, well, that I get. But I just always viewed it like, if you have family in Atlanta or whatever, and they come up to visit you and like, oh, let's go to Yankee Stadium. Like, part of the Yankee Stadium thing is you hear Frank Sinatra as you leave. Like, I never thought of it as a winning-losing thing. I just never did, because they played it for me. Like, you have that differential. Like, to me, they played it when they won, they played it when they lost. How are we associating it with the victory?
Yeah, I'm thrilled that they got rid of it, and I did kind of feel like it was... Look, I don't know if I screamed. You go to a game and they lose. You're more annoyed by that. Right. But it was kind of like, as soon as the music started, it was just like, oh, geez, now I need to hear this. Okay. Like this past year when I went there and they lost to the Orioles, like, you know, 27-2.
Right.
Did I need Frank at this point? Well, like, I don't need this.
So let me ask you then, just to play devil's advocate, is it okay when they're down 27-2 in the seventh inning to do YMCA? Or should we not have, is that okay? Should we not be celebrating at all? Should we all sit there in silence as we're angry
at
the
losing? I think we should all suffer. All right, so that's what I think we should do.
So
we
no more YMCA. That's the next thing. I'm going to be at the forefront of this. When the Yankees are losing by five or more runs, no YMCA. I don't want to sit there down all these runs and watch the grounds crew drop. Just, you know what? Just clean up the field. I don't need the YMCA.
You know what? I'd be fine with that.
And
just
you know what?
The field, period.
And if you're down by 10 runs, I don't want to guess which train is going to win. Don't play the train game. And don't ask me what 80s song I want played in the eighth inning. They're losing. I don't want to play the game.
I think now you're going a little too far.
No, I'm just saying. Just saying. I don't want to do that stuff when we're losing.
I'm okay with some of that
stuff. No. Nope.
I want to play the train game.
No, no train game. Why? What, are we having fun?
The four.
We're losing.
The D.
We're losing.
Yeah. I think now you're going too far.
Well, I'm just saying. I'm just playing devil's advocate. Just playing devil's advocate.
Again, you lose the game. You didn't need Frank.
I get it.
They can have a bunch of different songs. They can have different Sinatra songs. I mean, you saw That's Life is apparently going to be the one that's right off the start, which is a good one.
Good one.
You got kicked in the groin. That's life.
Yeah.
There you go.
I agree. I don't mind it. I'm just saying I never viewed it as win-loss, play a different song. Like, to me, it's you go to Yankee Stadium, you sing YMCA, You do Cotton Eye Joe. I think they haven't done that in a while, but you do that. You do the 80s thing, the hat game, the whatever. You leave.
I guess. I don't know, because some of this stuff kind of intertwined after I had already been going to games for years.
Right.
So I feel like it was something that was new. So if you get rid of it, I'm cool with it. It's not like I didn't grow up that I had to have this or had to have that.
Right.
These things just kind of got incorporated over the years.
Right.
So I don't know. I'm not as stuck to them. I don't cling to them as much.
All right, and real quick before the update, Beard, happy?
I'm thrilled. Okay. I thought that was the dumbest rule. I've been screaming about that for years.
Yeah, I agree too.
And I do think that it helps in the clubhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Look, does it mean that you're going to win more games because you have a beard? No, that's nonsense. But I do think that there is something to the idea that you got a bunch of guys that are annoyed every time they got to look in the mirror, that it gets a little...
Sure.
It gets to the point where you start griping. You start being annoyed at all kinds of stupid things that have nothing to do with the game itself.
Right.
And that can detract from either your unity or just your enjoyment of playing the game itself. Is that overly simplistic? Maybe, but I feel like if you go to work and you go into a toxic environment where everybody hates each other and everybody's annoyed, it feels worse every day you go there. You feel like you're going in, every time you walk in the door. Do we need to make it like that? Do you need to make it any worse?
No.
Make it better.
I'm just saying, you cut that beautiful head of hair of yours just to work at WFAN.
They can't.
Well, not just to work here.
They can't
to work in general.
To work
in
general. All right. So yeah. So you just wanted to talk into a microphone. Had to cut your luscious locks.
I couldn't even get an interview in this place.
To be a New York Yankee, you can't cut your hair. I'm just saying. And you're right, though. We're all bitter and hate each other. So that's part of it.
It's a job. I mean, honestly, it's stupid.
I think I should put the picture up of my hair and your hair and see which one the fans think is better.
Oh, come on now. That's just not fair.
Why?
That's like putting your beard against my beard. I mean, let's just be fair.
Well, I don't have a beard, really.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. You don't really have hair either. And you had
that's legitimate hair.
You had a decent, you had a nice little cut there. Let's not start putting it up against the flowing locks that I had in my youth.
Yeah, okay. So I had more of like a normal hair thing, and you had the Weird Al Yankovic. It doesn't mean that, you know, anyone's worse or better. It's just, you know, it's the same. Let's see which one we like.
No, there was a worse and better. There was a better.
Oh, wow. Okay.
There was a better.
All right.
Low-carb keto yo-yo diets, GLP-1 injections, but you're never going to lose weight if your liver is clogged with fat. So what can you do? It's simple. Almacid. Almacid is a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight. And it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Join millions who have transformed their lives with Almacid. Find out more and see the university studies at almacid.com. That's almased.com.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.